Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570 Taos in Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. It is the post-draft. We're going to analyze and have analysis, and we're going to be talking about kickers and troubled rush edges and also new safeties and all sorts of roster stuff. Before we do that, I got to tell you, we're going to be at Coco's Pub, hence the Coco's established 1984, 85. Luke was established in 83, so very close. We're going to be there on Wednesday, giving out the Back to the Future scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery. We're also going to be at Red Brick Station in White Marsh next Wednesday, the 7th. Putting together an aggressive crab cake tour schedule into June and July before our 27th anniversary this summer, where I have baked up my 27 favorite things to eat in Baltimore. And I'm sampling some of that right now from Chicken Rico in Highlandtown. Luke Jones is here. A lot of draft, right? A lot of bad baseball over the weekend and the Yankees in town. You know, I don't know how the Ravens get back onto the front page here after the Tucker thing because they're not going to play for 5 months, and this baseball train wreck that we've been discussing has been, front and center on a daily basis, and it will be all week long with the Yankees here. But going down the list to all these 6-round draft picks, Tyler Loop will get the headline. The Mike Green sexual assault allegations will get the headline. We talked about Starks a ton. That was so Thursday night ago, but all of these players and 11 players, and the fact that they took them all, and then they've been on the phone all night, Saturday night and Sunday, trying to sign other free agents. They didn't need a backup quarterback because they signed Cooper Rush. They do this better than anyone in regard to how we're going to analyze it right now. Mike Green's assault stuff aside, and Tyler Loop, whether he can kick or not, but they have a plan. They go into this with a plan. And we talk about the Orioles pitching, and there was no backup plan. Usually, Eric has thought these things through, and this is why they're in the playoffs every year and have an opportunity, Mark Andrews dropping the ball aside at the end, to be in the hunt. And as much as our disappointment is extreme for the Orioles, and we're monitoring that on a daily basis, the Ravens can't disappoint us until, I don't know, November or December, when they're 5-4 or 6-5 or something that would be underwhelming yet competitive. I don't think we expect the Ravens to be 2-9, in November. Something really awful would have to happen. They become the hope when the baseball team goes away. And that's when third and fourth and fifth round draft picks become more interesting in August, when there might not be a spotlight around here on a baseball pennant run. And that's crazy that I'm saying that out loud 2, 3 years into this.
Yeah, I mean, one comment, because I always think back to, the 14 straight losing seasons, all of that. That there was always a mindset of, can the Orioles get us to training camp? And then, okay, well, the Orioles struggled to
Well,
get to the NFL draft at this
the
point.
problem with bad baseball is it goes away before Preakness Day. The Orioles were so bad for so long. Katie Griggs didn't understand this, so I wrote her a letter last week so she'd understand it, and the Whistler too, that how bad this is, that this season's the worst because there was hope. Most of the years, there was never a, you're like, can the Orioles just get us to, no. I mean, most years, they're not most, almost every year, other than the Palmeiro year, they were either bad or they were good. There was either hope or no hope. With the Ravens, there's always hope.
I mean, you made the comment. I mean, the Ravens can't hypothetically disappoint us until October or November. I would push back on that and say January, because, again, barring the extreme example of so many injuries, specifically to your franchise quarterback, who, is one of the very best players in the league and has been for years now, they're going to be there. Now, January's been a different story, but
Yeah,
they're
if they're
there.
4-4
They
on
get there.
Halloween, they're still very relevant.
Oh,
Like, right, yeah.
So, but, I'll kind of start off with this, because I wanted to say this, and we've already spent time talking about the earliest picks, and we're going to get into the mid to late round guys. But some really good draft in terms of names. Like, look at the names that the Ravens drafted. I mean, Malachi Starks, first of all. I mean, that's a good name, right? But go through the list. I mean, you have Bilal Koné.
I keep wanting to call him Malaki, by the way, but I know it's Malachi.
It's Malachi, yeah.
I know,
But
I'm
you
working
have
on it.
Bilal Koné. It's Koné, not Cone, the 6-round corner out of Western Michigan.
Kone, okay.
You have LeJonte Wester, who has a good chance to be their punt returner. a 6-round pick out of Colorado, who really tiny guy, but couple return touchdowns in his collegiate career at Colorado and Florida Atlantic.
LaJonte Wester, not
Wester,
Webster, Wester.
not Webster, not Westberg, Wester. I
Rhymes
mentioned
with Lester. Yes.
Lester. There
Yeah,
you go.
correct.
You have Aeneas Peebles, not Pebbles. Aeneas Peebles out of Virginia Tech. I
And you
mentioned.
think Aeneas, I'm seeing Aeneas Williams, the only one.
Yeah,
So I'm
I think
seeing this skinny guy that, runs like a deer.
six
No,
feet,
this guy's 300
289
pounds,
pounds.
right?
Yeah. Well, although, like I said in our previous segment, kind of a different body type. But he's not going to be a guy that's going to be an everyday defensive lineman. I think he's going to be like a situational tweener kind of guy.
Sort of weird dude, too. He went to Duke for a couple years,
He
right?
did. Well, that's kind of the new norm, though. But it's so funny because I'm going to show you something. For anyone that, kind of wants to know what it's like to cover the draft out in Owings Mills, for every player, they pass out a sheet. And you're over the years, you're so accustomed to seeing guys, a guy went to Alabama, a guy went to Georgia, a guy went to Arizona, whatever. And for the most part, it tends to be guys that was at one spot. Now, Malachi Starks still fits that profile. But now you look at it and you see, okay, I know this guy was drafted out of Virginia Tech, talking about Aeneas Peebles, but where else did he go? And you start looking and you see multiple schools on these sheets, and it just speaks to the different world we're in with NIL and the transfer portal and all that. But yeah, like the Ravens had this list. I didn't even get to maybe my favorite name on the list, Robert Longerbeam, 6-round pick out of Rutgers, who, by the way, 6-round pick. So again, all these 6-round picks you see. You'll see one or two of them you hope end up hitting, but considered a high character guy, smaller, it's going to have to play the nickel, but 5'11", 174 pounds. You can tell they like him. You can tell DaCosta talked about him in terms of hoping that they could get one of the two corners that they ultimately drafted in the six, and they got them both. So we'll see. Maybe he's the next Tavon Young kind of guy, or maybe not, but I just had to throw it out there. Lots of really interesting, unique names in this draft list. But I said this in our previous segment, but a franchise record 5 players in the 6th round. 6-round picks. I mean, I had the list in front of me. The most notable 6-round picks in history. You've got Adalis Thomas, Chester Taylor, Chad Williams, who was a really good dime back for a few years. Sam Cook, Tyrod Taylor, Ryan Jensen. Darren Waller, even if it didn't necessarily happen in Baltimore, certainly went on to the Raiders and had a lot of success. Chuck Clark, Bradley Bozeman, and even someone like Deshaun Elliott, who was a starter for a year or two.
Every one of those guys you've given me is a contributor, right?
Yeah,
And
you'd give a
that's what you
check mark.
have
That
on
was a good
53
pick.
team. Yeah. I mean,
In the 6th round, I
all of
mean,
those guys were great picks, not good picks, great picks.
yeah,
Like the
you
fact that they
always,
get on the field.
right, you always have to, one thing that I see a little too much binary evaluation of the draft in terms of good pick or bad pick. It's a sliding scale, right? In the 1st round, yeah, it better be a good pick. It better be someone that plays. It better be someone that, at the very least, is a solid starter. But as you go through the draft, you could have a 7th round pick who never starts a game for the Ravens, but if he's a solid backup for a couple years, plays on special teams, that's a good 7th round pick right there. Now, that's not what you want out of a first or a second or a 3rd round pick, but you have to understand the expectations for where you're picking in the draft. Like this draft right now, if I had the crystal ball and said, okay, what would it look like if we're looking back at the 2025 draft 3, 4, 5 years from now, what would constitute a good draft? Malachi Starks is an above average starting safety, coupled with Kyle Hamilton, who has since become the highest paid safety in the NFL. So you've got a cost controlled, affordable, really solid to good, and maybe really good starting safety next to Kyle Hamilton. I think that's what we would all hope Malachi Starks is going to be. Mike Green, again, acknowledging the character concerns and the accusations that prompted his fall down the draft board. You're hoping he's a starting caliber, legit edge rusher who, is a guy that can get 8 to 10 sacks a year. Like you'd love that. You'd sign up for that eagerly, and if he's better than that, even Great, even better. But then you get beyond those two guys, you're kind of looking at the rest. And I already mentioned Emory Jones. Can he develop into a starting guard? We'll see. Third round picks, you're hoping it's a guy who has a chance to be a starter for you. But you get beyond the third round.
Well, he's pick 91, and then after that you go to 129, 141, and then you slip off into, the late 100s.
And then you get into the 200s and it's like special teams guys, backups,
This is
whatever,
where I
right?
would say, and I could give praise to Eric DaCosta on the, they evaluate these guys. They know what they want. They've been relatively good at it. It's how they've all kept their jobs. It's how they've played into January. They haven't had the problem the Orioles have right now, which is they've never drafted a pitcher that's made it, right? And you could say that about Eric at the wide receiver position, and he had to sit on that for 15 years, right? Like that it never happened for them. They've been good at certain places, certain spots, tight ends, they've just been impeccable. When they draft tight ends, those guys get on the field. They all play well. Even if they don't, they go elsewhere. And when they won Super Bowls, it's been because they've had tight end play. But the notion that the offensive and defensive lines need to be shored up in various ways and that they don't need to draft Toledo not in the top 12 in order to fix that position. Let's go one by one through some of these guys because Emory Jones at pick 91, a tackle out of LSU that they're going to project as a guard, big guy, 6'5", and playing at a big school, and like project him as a starter. I don't know, but R Rosengarten came in and played pretty quickly. I would be interested to think of how they think of this guy giving Falele a run, or maybe being the guy on the left side that becomes the left guard for the next 5 years.
And I touched on this a little bit when we talked to, when we were talking about some of the earlier picks in our other segment, but it is interesting because the pundits really assume he's a guard long term, but Eric and John, they push back on just making that assumption. They acknowledge that, yes, that could end up being what it is, but they also want to look at him at tackle a little bit. I'll point out he's the right tackle. So even if you said he's got a chance to be your swing tackle, which I don't think that would be a great, to me, that's a plan B, plan C. I'm guessing right now their swing tackle is someone that's going to be signed. There's been some, there was even some chatter a couple weeks ago about a guy like George Fant, who's been around a long time. Not a guy that you want to start, but if he's your number three swing tackle, whether it means he's playing right tackle, you move Rosengarten over if Stanley misses a game, or however you want to do it.
The fact that they didn't draft it tells you that they have a plan. That's always the thing with the Ravens is I'm like, all right, so they don't show their whole hand, but as Ozzie would always say, sort of arrogantly and also matter-of-factly, we'll be ready to play. They'll have players. And this
Well,
is where
and
they have to get them. This is the week. These are the names that become when Charlie Morton can't do it, who do we have?
right, exactly. But I think with any draft, if you're being realistic about it, understanding that there are always exceptions, but typically speaking, the first and second round picks are the guys that have the expectations that they're going to be something meaningful, whether they start or whether they're a major rotation player for you, whatever. Those are the guys year one that you're really pointing to. After that, again, we'll see. That's not to say Emory Jones can't be the starting left guard, or we'll see how it plays out. But are you betting on that? Do you need that to happen this year? If you do, then you probably don't have the kind of roster you need to have to begin with.
Well,
So
let's give some examples here. Last year, Adisa Isaac, Devontae Walker, TJ Tampa, Rasheen Ali, Devin Leary, and then the seventh rounder, Nick Samak and Sanusi Kane.
I mean, those are
That's
special
those are the
teams
names
guys,
we're
and
talking about like a year ago, and what they delivered for last year's team, not a whole hell of a lot.
special teams. I mean, Adisa Isaac was hurt a whole lot. I think there would have been a chance for him to play some, but he couldn't stay healthy. Same with TJ Tampa. Devontae, Tez Walker played a little, caught a touchdown against the Giants.
But you say that about Isaac and Tampa, but are they not ahead of the depth chart of anybody we're talking about here in regard to once August comes around, nobody's heard of those guys. I mean, I barely remember their names because they went away, right? Like,
I mean,
but they're going to be higher up on your depth chart, or allegedly because they were draft picks that were injured last year that, hey, maybe this Isaac guy's going to be a player, right? Maybe.
Now, I would say this. I fully expect Devon, or I expect Mike Green to leapfrog Adisa Isaac. For example, I mean, I think he's going to leapfrog Ajabo. I think he's going to leapfrog Tavius Robinson. As I said, putting aside, not ignoring, but putting aside the character concerns that led to him dropping to late in the second round, you're talking about a guy that some people thought was one of the 10 to 20 best players in the draft. I mean, from a pure football standpoint, you could argue the Ravens came away with two first round picks here. Now, again, you better be right on the gamble that you're taking. I'll leave it at that. But yeah, you get beyond that. You're looking at these guys, you know, the 2 6-round corners, for example. Would I put them ahead of TJ Tampa on the depth chart? Absolutely not. I think TJ Tampa is someone that they're going to have some high expectations for this year to not start, obviously, but be someone that you can count on as if you have an injury or two that he can step in and you're not going to completely fall apart. You know, you're hoping that. And that's what your expectations are for third and fourth round picks. I mean, I'll use another example of someone, you know, the next pick on the list for the Ravens in this draft class, Teddy Buchanan, you know, linebacker out of Cal. Impressive guy talking to him on the Zoom. I'm really excited to be a Raven. Played at Cal, played at UC Davidson before that. Are they looking for him to start this year? No, but let's also call a spade a spade. Trenton Simpson got benched after the bye week last year, but Chris Board's gone. And Malik Harrison's gone. So can Teddy Buchanan potentially push Trenton Simpson if Trenton Simpson doesn't have a good summer, if Trenton Simpson doesn't get off to a good start? And could he be in the conversation to at least play a little bit in sub packages? Sure. Does Teddy Buchanan, as a fourth round pick, and this is where we go back into the value of these draft picks, does he absolutely need to become a future starter for that to be considered a decent pick? You know, it depends. You know, can he develop at the very least? Can he be one of your special teams aces? And can he be a guy that maybe you use him as a sub package linebacker? Because Eric DaCosta talked about how much he liked Buchanan's coverage ability, which we've talked about that a lot. Off ball linebackers, you need guys who can cover. And but the problem is they're kind of sort of unicorns in the NFL at this point in time. So the guys that are really good, they're the ones that get paid. That's why I kind of said, the fact that Roquan Smith struggled in coverage to the degree that he did last year was disappointing to me, because to be a $20 million linebacker, you've got to cover. So can Teddy Buchanan do that at some point in time? Maybe. But he's a fourth round pick. Are you expecting that? Are you expecting that year one? No.
Expecting him to help play Roquan Smith? No.
Yeah, he's going to be, you hope he's flying down the field making tackles on special teams for
But to
you.
your
And
point, the reason they needed to draft him is because they failed with Simpson.
Trenton Simpson,
And
well,
Simpson was a low
and
third
I'm
round
not.
draft pick. He was the second pick taken in that draft because they didn't have a two.
Right.
So, you know, it felt like there was a level of expectation for him, especially with Patrick Queen disappearing. And Patrick Queen was a lottery pick on some boards. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Patrick Queen was, you know, a guy the Steelers felt like they can build around the same way that the Jets felt like they could build around Mosley. Nobody's building around Trenton Simpson right now.
No. And to be clear, I'm not ready to say he was a failure in the past tense. I'm not at all ready to say that.
He hadn't
But
made it yet.
he's got to take a meaningful step this year. He's got to be better this year, because there is no Malik Harrison or Chris Board now. Teddy Buchanan's that guy. Now, maybe they sign another veteran linebacker as a backup. I think that's entirely plausible. But the point is, yeah, partially because Trenton Simpson didn't look as good as they wanted him to look, and he was benched as a result. And because of the guys they lost, yeah, they go and draft Teddy Buchanan.
By the way, their
So,
third linebacker, and I'll make this case with you, is Kyle Hamilton. If Molly, you know what I mean? Like that really is the way they'd rather play it. They'd rather play it with Hamilton as a linebacker in a two linebacker set with a, you know,
They're
eagle,
going to play dime.
whatever you want to call
They're going
that
to play a
play.
lot of dime this year. I mean, I just.
And that's where TJ Tampa and these little guys that get in, on the field, DBs that can get out there, learn the system, play and play in some space. You know, the kid from Stanford couldn't a couple of years ago, right? So, and Brandon Stevens, and you know, some of the, by the way, their 22 draft really looks smell good, right? I mean, they've had some drafts that have like a bunch of their players have made it. I'm wondering where all of these, this draft's weird because there's so many sixes, right? To your point, like
Yeah.
I'm looking at these guys and saying, Lejonte Wester, he's a 203rd player taken. He's a wide receiver. I
Yeah.
don't, you know, Aeneas Peebles, great name. Robert Longerbeam, great. These are all 210, 230. They're like, Mr. Irrelevant kind of draft guys.
Yeah, I mean, you're not, I'm not going to sit here and try to remotely lay out a scenario where all five of those guys make an impact for the Baltimore Ravens. I'm guessing there's a pretty solid chance that not all five of those guys make the 53-man roster, and a couple of them wind up on the practice squad. I mean, that's what we're talking
Why does
about
think
here.
it's different? They a couple
But
22, they had six picks in the fourth
sure.
round. That's just a bunch of guys between 110 and
Yeah.
130. That's a whole different thing than a
That,
bunch of
no
picks
question.
between 180 and 220,
No
right?
question. And even if this is a draft that has more depth, where you said, yeah, we'll take a couple more swings than normal in the sixth round, which that's fine. And I'm not criticizing that. If that's your strategy, then fine. Then even so, out of five sixth round picks, if two of those guys, three, amount to even just being like useful backup players, then those are good picks. And if they don't, well, then they're sixth round picks, right? I mean, sixth and seventh round picks are not the kind of guys that, there's no such thing as a seventh round bust. There's no such thing as a sixth round bust. Those are late picks. It's like saying a rookie free agent is a bust, you know? Like, now, but that said, you need
Unless you're
Malachi.
Shedeur Sanders. I had to
Sure,
get that
yeah,
in
I'm
because I haven't
crazy.
even been.
Look,
That's the biggest
we'll
star
touch
of
on
the
that in a
weekend. We
moment,
haven't
but
talked about it
there's
at all.
one thing I want to just finish off saying, because you alluded to it with the Kyle Hamilton piece, with how that factors into how they're going to view the inside linebacker position. That to me is why the Malachi Starks pick was so important, because I think it's not just that, okay, this guy can replace Marcus Williams at a fraction of the cost, and Marcus Williams was a total disaster last year and was benched and all that, right? That we've covered, and we've talked about that for the better part of 6 months, longer than 6 months. We've talked about that for 8 months now. But it's just the trickle-down effect that it has in terms of now you're back in a position using three safety alignments, being able to move Hamilton around. By the way, Starks and Ardarius Washington can also move around. So you're in a position, you've heard me talk about this a lot the last few years, positionless defense on the back end of their secondary, where the opposing quarterback looks at them and has to identify, what are they doing? It goes way beyond just, are they in man or zone? It's, okay, is he a deep safety, or is he creeping up to the line of scrimmage? Is he going to stay at the line of scrimmage and blitz, or is he dropping in the coverage? I mean, you have between Hamilton, Starks, Ardarius Washington, and I'd even throw Marlon Humphrey in there, because Marlon Humphrey has that inside outside versatility, as can play great at the nickel, but can cover on the outside. You have four pieces now in what projects to be your dime or even your nickel, where, if you want to play a three safety nickel alignment, that you can really use a lot of pre-snap deception that is going to cause the quarterback to hesitate, to hold on to the ball, to make a bad decision, to help your pass rush get home. We've talked about the pass rush. So there's such a trickle-down effect of the Starks pick that then also allows you, hey, one thing we haven't talked about, do the Ravens have a ton of outside corner depth? Well, that's up for debate. They have Marlon Humphrey and Wiggins, who are going to be their starting outside corners when they're in base. They added Awuzie, who is an accomplished veteran when he's healthy, but has had a lot of injury concerns. But now that you are going to lean so heavily into three safety alignments, you might not have three cornerbacks on the field a whole lot. You might be in a three corner nickel only, 20 snaps a game. If Awuzie only has to play 20 snaps a game, or 25 snaps a game, or maybe 30 snaps a game, you like the odds of him staying healthy a little bit better than if he's having to play 55 snaps a game, like a team that runs a conventional nickel has to do. So that Starks pick, I don't go as far as some people say it's almost like drafting two players at once. No, it's not, but it does afford you so much more flexibility and malleability with what you want to do with your defense. That also impacts, being light at inside linebacker, being light at outside corner, that you can just do all those things and ultimately free up Kyle Hamilton to just be the wrecking ball Swiss Army knife that he can be. That you love him playing the run, you love him blitzing, you love him dropping into coverage. He can cover tight ends, he can cover slot receivers, he can cover deep. He more than proved that last year. He played great in the role that they asked him to play after they benched Marcus Williams for good. But you don't want to pigeonhole him into having to do that all the time. That's the point with that. So, they're just in a position where they can be a little more flexible. And yeah, now they're shaky depth at inside linebacker and their shaky depth at outside corner. You can alleviate that a little bit. You can make that feel like it's not quite as big of a deal. Not saying it's not a big deal, and certainly you're hoping some of the players that they drafted, you're hoping Teddy Buchanan can be a useful backup inside linebacker. You'd love if Bilal Kone and a longer beam can develop, but at the same time, I'm not going to be unrealistic and think that a six-round corner is going to get on the field. If either one of those guys are playing this year on defense, either they are such a prodigy that, oh my goodness, it's one of the best picks you've ever made, or the Ravens are in trouble because they've lost multiple guys in the secondary. So that's where you look at these six-round picks, and Tyler Loop's a different story. I would even say Lajonte Wester is a different story because you're looking for him to be. You're looking for him to maybe be your primary punt returner because they don't really have that on the roster right now. So you're hoping he can fill that very specific role on special teams. But, the rest of these guys, these are, they're not much more than flyers in the sense that they clearly have something about their skill set that you like. You had a coach or a certain scout looked at them and said, "Hey, we can get that guy late on day three. And you know what? I think he's got a chance to develop into something in a couple years." I mean, that's what you're talking about there. Malachi Starks needs to play right away. Mike Green needs to play right away. Emory Jones, we'll see. Teddy Buchanan needs to play right away on special teams at the very least. But beyond that, I mean, a name I didn't even mention, and I'd be remiss because I was easily the most impressive of these young men getting on the Zooms to talk to the media. Carson Vinson, Alabama A&M, purely a developmental long-term left tackle project, but was the only HBCU kid at the Senior Bowl, and he did a nice job. And you know what? It was just really, I could tell when they talked to him that they came away impressed because he just seems like an impressive young man. And look, I have no idea if an Alabama A&M left tackle is ever going to translate into being anything in the NFL. But in the fifth round where they took him, they clearly have some intrigue to say, you know what? He's probably not going to play much this year. Maybe he'll be a game day backup for us, but we like something about him to give him a chance to give George Warhop and their coaches a chance to develop him. Maybe in a couple years, if everything goes perfectly, in a couple of years, he's in the conversation to replace Ronnie Stanley. Who knows? I like that pick there, in the fifth round. Look, if I'm betting yes or no, does he become their future starting left tackle? I'm going to say no, most likely not. But there's something about him they liked, even if it was just his character and some raw skills. But in the fifth round, if it's a guy that you think has a chance to be a left tackle in a couple of years, you absolutely do that, and that's where you say, if it doesn't work out, it's not really a bust because it's a fifth round pick. But that's where this draft is so interesting because you have so many of these late round guys that, if they all flame out, I don't think it dooms them by any means. But if Starks is a starter and Green is a starter, and let's say one of Emory Jones or Teddy Buchanan become a starter in the next couple of years, and you come away with a couple other good depth pieces out of those last five or six picks, Nestor, that's a heck of a draft right there. I mean, that's not 1996 all time or 2018 all time, but it's up there amongst the better drafts they've ever had if that plays out. So no, you're never expecting all 11 or all 10 or all eight of your picks to hit. You need your early picks to hit, and then you see what happens with these later round guys. But I think it's a interesting enough collection to kind of see how it plays out. And this will probably be the last time you and I talk about four or five of the names that we just spent a few minutes discussing, certainly this year at the very least. But hey, if it's the kicker of the future and your punt returner who returns a kick for a touchdown in week eight, then that's a pretty good sixth round right off the bat, let alone what could happen here over the next few years.
We're going to continue talking about the Justin Tucker and the kicker thing and figuring that out. I would say that's sort of the lead story in people's minds. The kicker, in addition to the safety and what that means on the field with Kyle Hamilton, the low-hanging fruit of the obvious. But the kicking thing is obvious, and I don't know if it's low-hanging fruit. And I even said, will there be a competition or will they just get rid of him? I haven't thought about the money side of getting rid of him and cap hit before June 1st, after June 1st, what all of that means. He will kick in the league again. I keep saying that. He might still kick here again. I don't know. But they didn't get they didn't get the first kicker. They got the second kicker. And I found that to be sort of just interesting. I mean, a talking point to say, who did they really want? They can say they wanted him now. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. Maybe the Florida State kid. Maybe there were three kids. They could have said any of them. They don't usually think like we'll take any of them when it comes to a kicker and John Harbaugh in this organization. I would think that they like what they like. And I hope deep down they didn't like the Miami kid.
Yeah, and again, maybe they liked them both. But I will also say the Ravens, when you kind of look at how they've operated over the years, they haven't necessarily been the team, especially on special teams, let's say. They haven't necessarily been the team that's going to go along with the rest of the groupthink, the rest of the consensus. I mean, when they drafted Jordan Stout when they did, you'd find plenty of draft pundits that would say that, that wasn't necessarily the most the most anticipated move if you're drafting a punter. They kind of like who they like. And, Tyler Loop's got a really strong leg. I think, even going into his swing mechanics and stuff, basically stuff that I'm only echoing what he said, what John Harbaugh will say, what Randy Brown will say at some point in time, in talking about kicking. There's also a certain prototype that they're looking for in terms of mechanics and all of that, right? I mean, we think of it in terms of just lining up, kick the ball straight, right? Or if there's a little bit of a wind, then, give it a little bit of a fade or a draw, whatever.
Yeah, but they're all
There's way
golfing
more.
minds, is what
There's
they are.
so much to that. There's so much to it that I think goes beyond, okay, who had the best stats in college? I mean, Justin Tucker in 2012, he didn't go drafted. I mean, if anyone, including the Ravens, had any idea how good he was going to be, he at least would have been a fourth or fifth or sixth round pick, but he went undrafted. So, that's where I look at this thing, and that's why I said, as much as they like Tyler Loop, and even if they cut Justin Tucker tomorrow and it's over, that doesn't guarantee Tyler Loop's going to be kicking for them in week one, let alone talking about week 10 or next year or 5 years from now. He's got to do the job, and we've seen
Well, every
countless
other
kickers.
kicker that's not Justin Tucker just comes and goes. This has been a really weird thing to have a kicker around here for
No doubt. I
14
mean, you
years.
think about what you have in the league right now, just right now. There are only a few kickers that, if I asked you, name their kicker, the Steelers, okay, Boswell, it's Kansas City, Butker. Like, there's only about for even, and I don't mean like your top tier NFL fan who watches NFL Network 8 hours a day, but like someone who keeps up with things to a reasonable degree, reads about the league. Maybe fantasy football makes that a little bit different, but in terms of guys that are mainstays, you can maybe name the kickers on two hands and probably have fingers left over in terms of guys that are really recognizable that you
Well,
associate
that's
with
why you
one
look at this
team.
kid and say Tyler Loop, that's
Who
great. But we
knows?
mentioned Graham Gano, we mentioned
Yeah,
Steven Alshon.
exactly.
Billy Cundiff had kicked in Dallas and had been other places, and they brought him in, and everything was fine until it wasn't, right?
Yeah. And you know what? Here's another scenario for you, and this is purely off the top of my head. This is not any intel, so if it happens, I am not taking any credit for this. The Ravens, when you look at their roster makeup right now, they have the ability to have a pretty extensive undrafted rookie class. I would not remotely be surprised if they bring another kicker in. Now, it might just be for a tryout for rookie camp. It might be someone that maybe is there for OTAs and they cut on June 3rd. Or maybe it's someone that maybe they move on from Justin Tucker and they say, okay, Tyler Loop's the favorite, but you know what? We kind of like this other kid from ABC University, or maybe we bring in someone from the UFL who, even though no one's watching that right now, there is a UFL going on right now. And we've actually seen this. Go look at the Detroit Lions kicker. from this past year. That guy was in the UFL and he had a heck of a season.
Well, there's
So,
also the guys that they would have brought in if Tucker pulled a hamstring back in week 11, right? I
correct.
mean,
So,
there's a lot of guys on the street.
when I say this, this does not mean that anything is decided at this point. With putting aside the Tucker part of it, let's say Tucker is done. Let's say whether they announced it this week, next week, or the day before training camp, let's say Tucker's done and they know he's not going to be back, but they're letting this play out. That's not at all to say that Tyler Loop is just going to be handed the job. And that's not to say that there's not going to be some competition brought in, whether it's another young kicker or to your point, it would be the same list of guys that you would call if Justin Tucker turns his ankle kicking off in week three that you bring in a veteran. I mean, go back to some of the other kicking competitions. They had Hauschka against Graham Gano. They had, what was it, Shane Graham against Billy Cundiff one year when I was out covering training camp in I guess it was Westminster at that point. I don't think it was Owings Mills just yet.
Shane Graham was a hell of a kicker for a long time,
Yeah.
too.
So, but the point is that this is still TBD, whether we're talking about Tucker's situation or whether we're talking about Tyler Loop potentially replacing him. You're not just a six-round pick. This isn't the Raiders drafting Sebastian Janikowski in the first round, right? Where you say,
Well,
all right, that's
and
your
this is
kicker.
where I would temper expectations for how this team has played football and how John Harbaugh has managed football and how they've managed fourth and three from their own 33, thinking all we got to do is get to the 45-yard line and we can kick it. He can kick a 58-yard, 60-yard field goal. No problem. We'd have no problem doing that if it's third and 21 and we get a penalty and Ben Cleveland's offsides or hold somebody or whatever. They've played football differently over the last decade. The bulk of John Harbaugh's, fiefdom here, they've played football differently. They've managed clock differently. They've managed the second half differently. They've managed the last two minute and 4 minute differently in regard to where the point is where you could credibly bring Justin Tucker on to kick, and not just at the end of a quarter, but like, hey, we can make this kick. Let's not punt. Let's kick a field goal. And it's changed the game for them versus 28 of the other 32 teams and how they have to play it every year. And they might not have that advantage anymore.
They might not, but I would also say, and we've also seen this, we've also seen that, yes, continue to be a weapon, but not need to rely on it to the degree that they did in the later Joe Flacco years, where, and I'm not saying that to pick on Joe specifically, but let's face it, those were not very good offenses at that point in time. They just weren't. They weren't running the ball. They didn't have very good wide receivers, all of that. Joe wasn't as good as he had been, all of that. But at that point in time, they kind of needed Tucker to score points. And we've seen from about 2019 on, they've been in a different position in terms of going for it more on fourth downs when you have the running game that you have, when you have Lamar, now when you have Derrick Henry, right? I mean,
And finishing drives, and
so yes,
finishing drives,
I
yeah.
agree with what you're saying in terms of yes, you're certainly in a position at times where you can kick a long field goal rather than punt. But we've also seen Justin Tucker the last couple of years struggle more so from beyond 50 yards. Even before last year, that was becoming a little bit more of a
Well, to
thing.
your point, fourth and
So,
three, fourth and goal from the three. They're going for it. They want to score points here. They're not even going to try a field goal. So there's been a lot of that in the history of football, that would be. Let's just kick a 17-yard field
and
goal, and we're
that's,
gonna, that's what we're gonna do.
and you've seen a lot of teams just change philosophically in general. With that, with analytics and understanding point expectancy, win probability, all those different things, whether you like it or not, we've seen more of that. But yeah, I think, with Tucker, from the time Lamar Jackson's, first full season, the revolution was in full force at that point, and Lamar was running for 1,200 yards and throwing 36 touchdown passes. That go back and look at that year. Justin Tucker didn't, he kicked a heck of a lot of extra points. But he didn't kick a ton of field goals that year because they were scoring touchdowns all the time. So even from that standpoint, if you're moving on from Tucker, if you have Tyler Loop, are there going to be some times where the Ravens might be a little more aggressive in terms of not just settling for a field goal? Yeah, they had to do that last year when Tucker was struggling. So will there be a change in that way? Sure, I think so. But you're hoping that. If you are indeed moving on from Tucker and you're going with Tyler Loop, you're hoping that what you've seen to this point in terms of your evaluation. You think there's a lot of meat on the bone there just in terms of his raw skills. And you're hoping that you can coach him up in the way that not just Justin Tucker, not just Billy Cundiff, not just the guys that have actually kicked for the Ravens, but you mentioned Corey Vedvik, who they got a fifth round pick for, but he flamed out very quickly. But what about someone like Will Lutz, who was in camp with the Ravens? Will Lutz has had a really nice long career as a kicker. I mean, he never had any shot of ever kicking for the Ravens because he came in when Tucker was already established. But he learned from Jerry Rosberg and Randy Brown and the operation that the Ravens had, and he parlayed that into a really nice career for himself. So you're hoping that the Ravens brass, their special teams operation, will be able to, whether it's Tyler Loop or some other young kicker they bring in, that they coach him up and, become someone that, doesn't need to be the best kicker in football, but can be a plus and not a concern. Justin Tucker was a liability for them last year. I mean, he was. That's why, again, so much of the talk about the accusations and all the off field and all that, which I'm not making any making light of that whatsoever, but this was already someone that you were at least having conversations to say, do you need to start at least looking at bringing in competition for him at this stage of his career? And obviously, the Banner reporting and all these allegations very much expedited the urgency to do that. So now, we'll see what Tyler Loop can do and whether Tucker's going to be in camp competing with him or whether they quietly move on, the Friday before Memorial Day or who knows. Again, I'm just spitballing at this point because we don't know the timetable of this investigation that the league's conducting, regardless of your faith in it or not, Nestor. We don't know when it's going to be completed itself. So, we're going to see, but clearly they like Tyler Loop, and if he's going to be their kicker, then yeah, for a championship team, you need him to be able to do the job. That's why, as I said, I would not be surprised to see them kicking the tires on or on, whether it's another young kicker or another veteran at some point. Not today, not tomorrow, but maybe at some point in training camp, if Tucker is in fact gone by that point, that you at least have a veteran in here as a contingency plan in case things don't work out with Loop.
Yeah, you don't just pick a kicker at pick 186 and think, oh, we solved the problem.
Yeah, you don't
Okay.
just put your feet up, right? Yeah, I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
it's.
We got our guy that's going to hit a 51 yarder in Buffalo when it's 12 degrees to send us to the Super Bowl. I don't
We'll
know.
see.
But you better
We'll
have that
see.
guy. You better have that
You hope.
guy.
You very much hope you have it.
He is.
Unless your offense is just scoring touchdowns, which, hey, if that's the case, then it's not quite as important.
He is Baltimore Luke. He is available, very available individual. He'll be in our press box seat at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. I have inked a letter to Katie Griggs. The Orioles are falling apart. The Ravens are trying to put it together. It is springtime around here. We haven't even got, it's Derby week as well. We got all sorts of things going on. We're going to be at Coco's Pub on Wednesday. Marcel and I have been texting all morning. Looking forward to it. We're going to have the scratch-offs in the Maryland Lottery, the Back to the Future scratch-offs to give away on Wednesday. Also, some great guests. Jamie Costello is going to be coming out talking some baseball with us. Probably, I think he went to the movies with his kids the other night too. So we're going to be talking about life after television with the King of Rosedale, Jamie Costello. So I'm looking forward to that. Next Wednesday, we'll be at White Marshes Avenue at Red Brick Station. Been a long time since I've bent the elbow there with some blueberry ale. We'll be doing the show there next Wednesday, the 7th, on the Avenue in White Marsh. All of it brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Big week here. Yankees in town, Royals in town this weekend. Orioles trying to find themselves, figure out the pitch, and trying to win a game, trying to hit the ball. And the Ravens trying to bring in their rookies and figure out the springtime thing. Oh, we might even get an NFL schedule coming up in a couple of weeks, too. So that'll be nice. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore positive.